It's time for Wealth DNA with Ron the Ronald Naraki. It's time to check your Wealth DNA so you can enjoy the second half of life. Here's the host of the show, Ron Naraki.
Hello, welcome to the Wealth DNA radio show, and I'm honored that you're joining us today. Did you notice that last week the days seemed longer than usual? Well, they were for all of us in the Northern Hemisphere, at least. Since last week was the summer solstice, which marks the official start of summer and the longest day of the year. More importantly, I hope you use that extra daylight productively. For our listeners in the Southern Hemisphere, let me add two optimistic thoughts. Last week, you had the longest night of the year. I want to ask how you spent it. And for the next 6 months, the days will be getting longer. So no matter how you look at it, there's always a silver lining. Hopefully this brief intro helped you realize that, as I did, that we're all living in part of a single global village. Very different places and climates, and yet the principles investing and the opportunities available in direct investments in real estate are universal. Today we'll continue our series on direct investment in real estate. This is the third investment strategy we'll be covering, investing in lease option properties. You may recall a direct investment in real estate is one of two of the best ways to generate positive cash flow that allows you to replace the income from a job. Today's topic is near and dear to my heart, since it's one of the core strategies we use in the residential real estate fund I manage. Hopefully that qualifies me to provide you some insights that you would not get from your next-door neighbor, your handyman, coworker, or even your financial advisor. As I often mention, too many people invest the way they do because they're following what others do. We even talked about these sheep. They say to themselves, "Self, I don't know much about investing. Certainly my neighbors and friends collectively know much more about investing than I do, so I'll do what they do." Sounds like a logical approach, right? Since none of us can know everything about everything, which is certainly true, so I need to rely on others to help guide me and help me to make the right decisions, which again is not a bad idea. The analogy I've used before is the work around your own home. You either do it yourself, you outsource it to somebody who knows how to do it, or it just doesn't get done. Using that analogy of chores and projects around the house, if you decide to do it yourself, that requires you to have the tools, the knowledge, and the time to do it. And if you have them, then this is certainly the least expensive alternative. Now, that second alternative is to outsource to somebody who knows what they're doing. But that highlights the two fundamental differences between in listening to the financial advice of your neighbors, your relatives, or friends, versus outsourcing your household chores to somebody who knows what they're doing. The first is, if you're outsourcing your household projects, you choose someone who knows what they're doing, versus listening to the advice of people who may not have the skills and very likely are among the 95% of the population that are not wealthy. Now, we also, if you outsource your household projects, that might cost you an extra $100 or a couple thousand dollars than doing it yourself. Now, compare that to following bad financial advice, which might affect your long-term retirement portfolio by $1 million or $10 million. There's a huge difference. Today is June 25th, 2012. It's 8:04 in Phoenix, Arizona. A.M., that is, 8:04 a.m. You're listening to the Wealth DNA Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki. The show airs every second and fourth Monday at 8 a.m. in Arizona. I certainly hope you can join us each time we air, but if you miss a show, you can hear it on the archives. Just go to www.wealthdna.us, where we list each of the shows, both upcoming and archived. This particular point, the fact that we have an archive, is especially important today since I won't cover some of the skills we talked about in earlier shows. I'll highlight where they were. You'll need to look them up. I'll mention them by topic number And if you didn't listen to those shows or you didn't take notes, you'll probably have to re-listen to get the total picture of the skills required for investing in lease option properties. Now, for those of you checking the U.S. equity markets that opened recently, after a volatile week that basically ended where it started, lots of ups and downs and excitement, and we're back to where we were. Well, today the U.S. markets are off to a very negative start. We're down about 1.5%, actually down 1.6%. That's a big, and we've talked about this kind of swing is a very volatile day. So a very negative start, 1.6% down. Asia was down about 1%. It varied across the markets. In Europe, about 2% so far. So Europe is being negatively impacted, whether it's the Egyptian elections or other news about Europe. I haven't even had a chance to follow up what the talking heads are saying. Although that's not our topic today. Today we're talking about investing in lease option properties, and we sure have a lot to cover. The big question of the day, should you be investing in lease option properties? Now, if you're expecting me to give you a yes or no answer, you'll be disappointed. If, on the other hand, you're looking for more information on why it might or might not make sense for you and what factors influence whether it's right or not for you, then keep listening. That's what I'd like to cover today. And I'd like to repeat a note that I periodically mention. Although I try to make sure we cover the fundamentals of investing, which we do, there are times when my own biases can affect the comments or the content or maybe even the delivery. Since I invest in residential real estate, specifically lease option is one of my preferred strategies, maybe the tone of my voice or some of the details I cover might make it seem like I'm recommending this strategy for you. But if you're aware of that, that might help you detect if there are some biases in my comments or my voice. I'll try to be objective, giving you both sides of the equation. Now, regardless of the strategy I choose for the real estate fund I run, knowing about and understand each of the four will be beneficial before you make your final decision. Who knows, you might choose number five, doing nothing. But it won't help to blame me for making that choice. If I'm correct, then you will regret that decision. Now, where do we start when we're talking about investing in lease option properties? It's just like talking about investing in the stock market or investing in general. There's really no single starting point, just a lot of interrelated topics. Let me start with something that appears to be at least an essential first element. Let me define what a lease option property is or a lease option contract is. Later, when I talk about the skills, I'll talk a lot more about the variations or flavors of a lease option contract. The lease option contract actually has two portions, both those words. Whether they're in a single contract or two separate agreements signed the same date and interdependent isn't real critical. The first part of the contract is a lease, just like the word says. So the client is a tenant in the property during the contract period. The second part of the contract is an option, which provides the client the exclusive right, let me repeat that, the exclusive right, but not obligation to buy the property. So what does that mean? This client is the only one that can buy the property during that option period, but they are not required to buy it. Lease option means just that. Now, the concept of this option is identical to when we talk about it in the stock market. You could have a call option to buy stock or a put option to sell stock. In both cases, you have the right, but not the obligation, to buy or sell that stock. All right, to move ahead, I suggest we first sit on the client's side of the desk. So if we have the investor side of the desk that you're sitting on, walk around to the other side of your desk and look at it from the perspective of the client who's sitting before me or you and wants to buy the property using a lease option arrangement. You see, they wouldn't be here if they had sufficient down payment, good credit, regular documentable income. They would buy a home using a traditional mortgage rather than coming to me or to you, the lease option investor. The reason they contacted one of us, or both of us, as lease option investors, is that they're missing one or more of these requirements to get a mortgage loan. Now, the cynics would say, and this is what I've been told many times, so these clients are subprime clients, like they should have a big stamp on their forehead. The kind that defaulted on their mortgages as soon as they lost their jobs or the economy started to take a downturn? Well, that's actually correct. They would be considered subprime clients. But I prefer to think of them and say that these are good people that want to own a home but can't get a mortgage loan. Incidentally, I refer to these clients as tenant buyers. This will be a lot clearer in just about a minute or so. Now, let's walk over to the other side of the desk, the one that you usually sit on, the investor side of the desk, and look for from your perspective or my perspective as the lease option investor. I have sitting before me this tenant buyer who's interested in buying a home on a lease option contract. So unlike the traditional tenant, this tenant buyer is not looking for a short-term rental. They want to buy the home. Sounds like a double connection. Okay, so I think I know what's going on. Thank you for the tip there, John. I suspect I may have... Sorry for a little bit. I'm getting an echo, evidently. No, I don't see that happening. Okay. Don't know exactly why. I'm going to make sure I've got all my other connections off. We're getting a little bit of an echo. All right, where were we? I'm back on my side of the desk interviewing this lease option or tenant buyer. They're not like a tenant. They're not looking for a short-term rental. They want to buy a home, but they can't get financing. All right, I'm going to try to adjust the microphone just a little bit, see if that helps. Now, your logical question. Will these subprime clients default on their contract, and I'll later have to foreclose on them, just like the banks did when some of the people lost their jobs or property value dropped? This is a very key point. So let me pause and let me break this down into two separate questions, that there really is two questions in there. The first is, will they default if they lose their job or something else goes wrong? Well, the answer is, it could happen. Just like a renter might not be able to pay their rent, you have to evict them. And during this contract, they are just like a tenant. The key difference being, they'll be more committed to finding a way to stay in the property than a typical tenant would. I'll cover that in more detail shortly. As I said, these are interrelated topics, so it's hard to cover it sequentially. Now, the second part of that question was, will you need to foreclose on the property just like the banks did? Here's the key difference versus selling the property. You still own the property. You have not transferred title. It is a lease and thus just an eviction. Big difference. As you likely know, eviction takes somewhere between 5 and 30 days in most states. Depends on your jurisdiction. A foreclosure takes a minimum, absolute minimum of 3 months in states like Arizona that we call deed of trust states and could take 6 months up to 3 years in a mortgage state. And as Michael Orr had stated in our program, those states will have a lot longer time period to clean up the mess created during the housing bubble. All right, I'm going to plow ahead. I know there are lots of questions that are coming up as I'm kind of giving you a basic definition. I'm giving you kind of the overview of the person sitting on the other side of the desk from me. But I want to jump ahead, and a lot of this things will come together as I cover the advantages and disadvantages, and later on the skills and a few other topics. Let's jump into the advantages and disadvantages. And bear with me. As I said, I know that we're still not answering all of the pieces that I'm probably introducing more questions during each of these sections than I'm answering, but they will get answered by the end of the show. Or, of course, you'll send me a chat message or call me. So what are some of the advantages and disadvantages? I believe it'll answer some of the questions, and again, it'll raise some more. And I'll try to compare to both rentals and fix and flips, which we talked about recently. Let's start with the advantages. Got to start with the good news, right? The first advantage, and I'm going to compare against a rental, you get higher quality tenant buyers than you would tenants. Since they plan on buying this home, they take much better care of it than a renter tenant would. Second advantage is there's built-in appreciation. If you do a fix and flip, you sell it at today's value. A lease option can have the purchase price linked to the future value when they're buying it, as opposed to today's value. Now, with a rental, you have no idea what the appreciation will be. It'll depend on the market and when you sell the property. The third advantage, the tenant buyer maintains the property. I touched on this a little bit. This is a huge advantage, though, over a rental, where the tenant will call you, maybe even in the middle of the night, if their faucet is dripping, a toilet is plugged, they lost their key, and any number of reasons. I'll come back to this point. We talked about the skills and the different ways of designing your contract to capture this advantage. Next advantage, tax benefits. Just like a rental, you can depreciate the property since you own it and it's leased. Now, fix and flip would not have any depreciation, and a fix and flip would be taxed at the time you sell the property, usually a month or 6 months after you bought it and fixed it up. With the lease option, you don't pay any tax on the sale until they exercise their option, which will be 2 to 4 years in the future. So you sign the contract now, they move in, and they buy the property 2 to 4 years from now. And the time frame will vary by every client, every property, and by your contract. Next advantage is passive income. Just like a rental property, you can earn cash flow each and every month, whether you're working at a job, sleeping, vacationing, or doing something important like listening to the Wealth DNA radio show. The cash keeps coming in. The next advantage is you can repeat the process if the tenant buyers default, and we'll talk a little bit about the default. Remember, you still own the house. Chances are it's in very good shape since they plan to buy it, so you can find another lease option client and repeat the process. If the property has appreciated in the meantime, you can sell it at a higher price than you did before. Next advantage, this will be the last one, I'll cover. You can convert it, this lease option contract, to owner or seller financing. When the tenant buyers are ready to exercise their option, they generally go to a bank, get a mortgage to buy the property. Now, if some reason they're not able to get that mortgage at a high enough value to buy the property, you can convert to seller financing, if and only if you own the property free and clear. Or you can convert it to owner financing if you have a mortgage on the property. Now, I'm sure I have just raised more questions than you came into the show with about this particular aspect. Since most people define owner and seller financing as synonymous, but we're going to cover that when we talk about private mortgage lending in July. So I'll keep you in suspense. There is a difference, a very key difference. I touched on it, but we'll talk more about it in July. Let's switch over to the disadvantages now of lease option investing. The tenant buyers may default. And I mentioned this in the advantages. You get to do the process all over again. It is a disadvantage if you thought the property would be sold, let's say, within 3 years. Chances are it will be sold in the next 3 years if you designed your contract properly. So it didn't happen the way you thought it would, but the world does not end. A second disadvantage, there are fewer tenant buyers than renters or buyers. So you say, there's no market for this. Let's not get carried away. You see, investing in lease option properties is indeed a much smaller niche. I'll give you an example that really kind of highlights that, or not an example as much as a fact. The MLS systems, multiple listing systems in most states, do not even have the ability to list a lease option property. They have two options. Bad term. How about alternatives? Capabilities. They only have the for sale and for rent sections. No lease option. We'll get back to how we handle that later. Next disadvantage, and this is true, just as it was in rentals and fix and flips, you need cash reserves. If you don't have cash reserves, chances are you're going to have a problem. And chances are, therefore, a direct investment in real estate will not be the best alternative for you. That said, the cash does not need to be sitting in your checking account. Because when I say cash reserves, a lot of people figure that we're talking about 0% sitting on the sidelines. You can be earning money in the stock market, the bond market, or even in a short-term private note. Now, it's not coincidence that our fund provides that option to real estate investors, as we know they need cash reserves and they want to earn a decent return on that money. The next disadvantage, the last key one I'll mention, lease option investing requires approximately 40 skills. Remember, we covered more than 30 with rentals, most of which also apply to lease option investing. That you are leasing the property pretty much the way a rental operates. And we'll add several more. So that is a disadvantage. 40 things you have to learn. Now, some of these key advantages and disadvantages I mentioned, you're going to think of some more. If you do, I'd love to have you send them to me. We'll get them out to our listeners on future shows. Where do you send them? My email, ron@wealthdna.us. So I try to cover the key ones and hopefully all of the important ones, but you might think of some. I can't be perfect all the time. You're tuned to the Wealth DNA Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Narakian, and I look forward to you joining us every second and fourth Monday. If you missed some of the prior shows, like the earlier ones on investing in rentals and investing in fix and flips, or you want to re-listen to them, we maintain an archive of shows on wealthdna.us. Let me repeat that, www.wealthdna.us. Now, if you'd like to get an email reminder of the shows, you can do one of two things, or of course both. Send an email to me, ron@wealthdna.us, and I'll keep you posted about future shows and events. Or in the upper left-hand side of the screen, way over the top of the radio player, there is a picture of Bowman Bay. Just click the follow button there. That'll keep you informed of the great shows on the Bowman Bay Network. Reminder, during the radio show, we welcome you. You, our listeners, to ask questions. Either start a chat in the area below the radio player. We've had a couple comments there today. Hopefully the sound is coming across better, although I can't figure anything else that could be going wrong. I have to fix all the possibilities. And the other option, you can either use that chat window or call us, 917-388-4162. That number is at the top of the screen, 317. That's right. No, I got that script. Look at the top of the screen, 917-388-4162. Okay, before I jump into the key skills required, which will take us a little bit of time today, let's talk about the returns. The returns you can expect from this type of investing. And I'm sure a few of you will be saying, well, if the returns aren't high enough, why should I bother listening to the rest of the show and learning some new skills? But we've designed our lease-to-own program, as we call it, so that we can earn between 12 and 25% per year returns. Why are those returns so much higher than a rental? Well, the primary reason is we built some appreciation into the sales price, similar to what a fix and flip investor would do. Now, the returns are typically lower than a fix and flip, since we're not quite as aggressive on finding the absolutely lowest price homes to buy. And since neither we nor our clients are particularly sensitive to the price being 5 to 10% higher. So we've designed the program with a 12 to 25% return. And that's pretty typical of lease option investors if you do it well. Now, if 12 to 25% annual return sounds too good to be true, one of those scams, I'd like to add that this particular investment is also secured by real estate. It's insured with both title insurance and property insurance. How many scams are insured and secured? Now, if on the other hand, 12 to 25% sounds pretty attractive, then it's time to start learning some new skills. If you decide to invest in lease option properties, there are a number of topics that you need to be aware of, and more formally prepared to deal with. These are the skills I'm talking about. There are approximately 40 of these topics. Don't be scared away. We'll cover all of the new ones today. You recall my earlier analogy where I was talking about handling your household projects or chores yourself or hiring someone else to do it? These 40 factors will help you decide whether you should do it yourself or not. There are options of partnering on these deals. So let's get started. We have a lot to cover. Number one, where are we in the economic cycle? Now, I'm not asking you to answer that today, but this is a question you have to ask yourself when you're about to invest in the next lease option property. Notice this question did not come up when we talked about rentals or with fix and flips. Neither of those strategies is particularly sensitive to the economic cycle. If we're at the bottom of the recession or just exiting one, it's actually a very good time to invest in lease option properties. You have to decide, are we at that period today? On the other hand, if everything is going extremely well, there's full employment, banks are willing to lend to anybody that wants money, that may be a good time to complete the sale of your lease option properties or convert them to owner financing. I would not suggest signing many new lease option contracts at the top of an economic cycle. And as we talk more about this, this will become fairly obvious. Number two, knowing how it differs from a rental. I suggest using this technique I used earlier. Start on the client's side of your desk. Walk around your desk, sit down over there, and look at what they want from the transaction. A tenant would want a short-term commitment, no obligations beyond paying their rent and utilities, and the freedom to move somewhere else at will. The tenant buyer, on the other hand, wants to own their own home. And if your property meets their needs, they will take good care of it so that they can eventually own it. Now go back and sit down at the investor side of the desk. A rental property owner, also known as a landlord, wants long-term passive income tax deductions and is willing to put up with the work required. The lease option investor, on the other hand, wants a shorter-term investment, good returns, tax deductions, and less headaches dealing with those four T's. You may recall in our rentals we talked about the four T's. The third skill is knowing how it differs from rent to own. Now, most people assume they're really the same thing, just a different term for the same thing. I differ. A rent-to-own is a rental contract with normal landlord maintenance obligations and an option contract added. So a plugged toilet? Call the landlord. AC is not cooling well? Call the landlord. A properly designed lease option contract transfers most of that maintenance obligation to the tenant buyer. In essence, the tenant buyer learns to behave as if they own the house even before they actually own it. Huge difference between a rent-to-own and lease-to-own. Call them synonymous if you like, at your own peril. Fourth skill is knowing how lease option differs from seller financing or selling with some sort of financing. There is a huge difference. When you sell the property with financing, your client has their name on the property. You no longer can depreciate it. And when they default, hearing ticking sound. Okay. Thank you for the tip there, Cindy. All right. So we're talking about skill number four, and I'm wondering if there is a noise in the room that could be causing it. Could be my kneeler. As most of you know, I use a kneeler that sometimes will squeak. Anyway, knowing how the lease option differs from seller financing, there is a huge difference. When you sell the property with financing, your client has their name on the property. You no longer can depreciate it. And when they default, you cannot do an eviction. Reminder, we'll cover this alternative in more details in the fourth strategy, private mortgage lending. So, a sale with financing is an eviction, is not an eviction. It is a foreclosure or a forfeiture. Fifth skill, designing your lease option program. Here is the hard part. There are a number of decisions that you need to make. They will affect the demand for your program, the returns, and the success rate of tenant buyers being able to buy the property. I'll try to cover the key question. You'll need the key questions. Let's try some. I'm probably talking too fast all at once. Let's cover the key questions you'll need to be able to answer while designing your contract. So write some of these questions down and decide how you would design your lease option contract. First, is the purchase price stated in the contract at the time of signing? Or is it established by appraisal at the time they exercise their option? Now, I'm not suggesting there's a right or wrong way to do it. Our fund sets the price at the time they sign the contract. There are no questions, doubts, unknowns on the part of the client or on the part of us as the investor. Second question, what do you do when the value of the property is below or above the contracted sale price? Part of this is easy. So I'm talking now when they're about to exercise their option and the property value is either above or below the contracted sales price. This part, well, at least part of this is easy. If the value is above the contracted price, your client's happy. They'll be able to buy the property at a discount to market value. The problem becomes if the value is below the stated contract price. You have several alternatives. I'll cover a few. You could lower the price to market value, therefore lowering your return. You could extend the lease option contract until they refinance in the future. You could offer owner financing. A number of options. What's the right answer? Let me share an excellent expression my mother outlaw used. There are enough different ways to do things that each of us can have our own. Third question to ask yourself, how long will your lease contract be? We happen to use a 3-year contract. Now, if you'd like a very high probability of default, that all of your clients fall through, use a 1-year contract. You see, if someone has credit or financial problems today, then chances are their situation will be dramatically different a year from now, are pretty slim. If you choose a 4 or 5 year length, you open yourself up to the risks of not being able to evict your tenants, your clients. Since the court may view that contract as a sale. So length of contract's pretty important. What length are you going to pick? Fourth question to ask yourself, do you allow your clients to extend that lease beyond the initial term? Are there penalties or fees for that extension? How do you set the lease price? Next question, how do you set the lease price? Important, and very important criterion. First of all, is it market value of rentals? Is it a formula based on your cost of the property? Or is it the highest price you can possibly get? How about a price similar to a mortgage cost? Again, I could repeat my mother outlaw's expression. There are a lot of different ways to do it. Next question to ask yourself, how much do you charge for the option fee? Do you charge 1 month's rent? $1,000? $5,000? Now, inexperienced sellers will suggest 20% down, just like the clients were buying the property. Let me share some obvious advice. The higher you set that fee, the fewer clients that'll be interested. On the other hand, the higher the option fee, the lower chance of default. No right answer, is there? Next question, and this will be my final key one. And again, there's probably other things you have to design in your contract. But here is the next one. And by the way, this might be the most important. Do you rebate, do you refund, do you give back, whatever you want to call it, part of their lease payment toward the purchase price? We do. We rebate 25% of the lease payment. This means that while they're in the lease portion of their contract, they're actually paying far less than neighbors are paying to rent the house next door. On the other hand, every single month they lease, their option fee is increasing, thus decreasing their chance of default with every month they stay. Now, is this the right formula for you? I don't know. But this and the other questions I mentioned are key aspects of designing your lease option program. There is no right way to do it. Now, for those listeners that just tuned in, welcome. You're listening to the Wealth DNA Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki. You can listen to the earlier portion on the archive, or if you missed prior shows, you can find them in the archives on wealthdna.us. Today, we're answering the question, should you invest in lease option properties? And we're talking specifically about the skills that you'll need. We're on number 6, drafting your contract. Now that you've designed your program and decided how you're going to charge, when you're going to charge, when you're going to extend, all of those things, if you decide to do a rent-to-own, you could use a standard MLS rental agreement and then draft a custom option agreement. If you How about choosing lease options? So if you choose lease option as opposed to rent-to-own, as I have, you'll need a contract that covers all of the decisions you made in designing your program. In other words, you have to cover those decisions. Somehow you have to incorporate them into your contract. And I can trust me, a lease option contract is very different than the MLS agreement. The MLS agreement will not have any of those considerations. So you want to outline all of those decisions and at the same time be consistent with local real estate and contract law. And I guess you get to answer the question I get at least monthly, because I'll get this from some of the listeners, or it may come on the chat window here in just a second. So let me answer it. Do I give away a copy of the contract we use? Simple answer, no. We spent a lot of time, legal costs, and modified it based on our experience over the last 5 years. We don't give away that knowledge. So you do have to draft your own contract. Use your own design. 7th skill, having sufficient cash reserves. Now this starts to step into territory we've covered with rentals and fix and flip. And as a matter of fact, when we talked about rentals, it was the very first point I mentioned. So you've noticed we have 6 additional skills on lease option. Remember, unlike passive investments where the worst that can happen is when they go down in value that, or even they could become worthless, that's the worst that can happen. With owning a lease option property, you may be obligated to periodically invest more money. So again, if you put $1,000 into a stock and it goes down in value, that's it. You just watch that money going down. Lease option property, you put $100,000 in and you need to put more money in. That's what you need to do. You need to have cash reserves to put that more money in for whatever reason. The general advice I gave for rentals is you'd have reserves to cover 6 months of operating expenses, which of course include the mortgage, utilities, taxes, insurance, and maintenance while it's vacant. These reserves, I'll remind you, are in addition to the money you needed to buy and fix up the property initially. Now, for lease option properties, I suggest the same 6-month rule. At the same time, realize the chance the property will be vacant during a long-term lease option contract are far lower than on rental contracts. But if you don't have those reserves, my advice is stay away from investing in lease option properties until you either have the reserves or you can finance enough of the property value and fix-up so that you have sufficient reserves. Number 8 skill. And again, we'll talk about a couple skills that duplicate rental and fix and flip. I'm going to focus on the differences. Number 8, pick a property. The valuation is key here. Although the properties you'll look at will be the same that rental investors are looking at and fix and flip investors are looking at, the fix and flip investors want the absolutely lowest price. They'll be investing the most to fix up the property, and they need enough margin for the say from the sale in the next 1 to 6 months. The investor buying it for rental is less price sensitive. He's going to hold it for the long term. He's cashing. He's going by cash flow, not by sale price. And chances are you, as a lease option investor, might even be willing to outbid both of them by a few thousand dollars, since you'll be able to build that into your sale price. That said, you don't want your purchase price plus fix-up cost to exceed today's market value. I try to target 85% or below today's market value. Now, one of the things our fund does differently than the average lease option investor, and I'm not saying it's right, I'm not saying it's wrong. We don't buy properties. We generally, and I don't say there's never a rule that says we always do this and always do that. We don't buy properties, fix them up, and start marketing them, as most rental, fix and flip, and lease option investors would. We generally don't even buy the property until we have a client that wants to move in. For that reason, we are willing to pay a little bit higher price. We know we're not going to have negative cash flow for a number of months while we're marketing. So there is a difference. That's part, not so much of our design, but of our strategy. Okay, ninth skill, estimating renovation costs. Again, you had to do the same thing on rentals, and you had to do the same on fix and flips, but where is the difference? Well, there is one similarity. Before you even buy the property and before you even submit your offer, you need to know how much you'll invest to make the property livable and attract tenant buyers. The easiest way to do that, of course, is to ask a few contractors for quotes. The most important factor, more important than getting those quotes, is to determine what you want done. And that's the key difference between the three strategies. For a rental, getting it rent ready might be having the carpets cleaned, one color paint inside, putting in some used appliances, and doing minimal landscaping work. In essence, a rental investor will fix up the property to approximately the same quality level as other rentals in the area. For a fix and flip, where the competition for buyers is much more intense and it's important to sell quickly, you need to fix it up to be drop-dead gorgeous, far better than other neighborhood properties. Now, for a lease option property, the level of renovation will be close to the fix and flip, but not quite as drop-dead gorgeous, since your client is still buying the property, but they're also comparing it to rentals. They're either used to renting, or they're at least comparing and saying, is this a deal? So if you overfix it up, you might price yourself out of the rental comparison. So you're fixing it up, in essence, a lease option property is fixed up between the rental quality and fix and flip quality. Now, in our case, we tell our clients that the house will be better than new. What do I mean by that? Well, a new house will not have fans, window shades, and landscaping. We include all of those. Additionally, if we already know who the client is that will be moving, and they may have some specific requests, so we'll tailor it. They might say they want more tile instead of carpeting. If you've got to change them, it doesn't make that much difference. Or they might decide that they'll save a little bit of money on monthly cost as well as their ultimate purchase price by doing some of the renovation themselves. We can make that adjustment in the contract. Okay, let's move to skill number 10, and here is where you have to go back to the archives. Skill number 10 is, in essence, all of the skills we covered in rentals, number 4 through 18. I'm not going to duplicate all of those. I won't repeat them, but let me just remind you that this includes topics like obtaining financing, buying the property, insuring it, fixing it up, and I'm getting a little bit of ticking noise in the background, and I'm guessing I know what that is, so I'm going to have to ask somebody to exit who is working here in the background. Okay, so cover skills 4 to 18 in the rentals, It doesn't, again, as I said, I'm not going to duplicate all of that. So it covers those topics. But it also includes licensing, registration, as well as all of the trust or LLC topics. Topic 18, again, all part of skill number 10 on my list, is knowing the rules in the Landlord-Tenant Act. I'll remind you that even though your client is ultimately buying the property, the contract is still governed under that legislation. Okay, so skill number 10 is to go back to the rentals and re-listen to or look at your notes on skills 4 through 18. Let's move to the next one, number 11, advertising and marketing the lease option property. Now, when we talked about rentals, that was number 19. So if you're looking at your notes, you'll know that's where we were at that point. The starting point for marketing a lease option is very similar to a rental. Put a sign in front of the property. One that explains, though, this is not a for rent sign. It's one that explains to the client that they can buy the property with monthly payments similar to renting. The next step is to network with your friends, family, and business associates. So many times people want to jump into first listing the property, and yet these are more effective than listings. Now, I already mentioned one challenge in marketing a lease option property. The MLS system doesn't have a category for lease option. So how do you advertise it? And by the way, that's true of most internet sites. They don't have a lease option category. There's one that has kind of set that up as an alternative. That site has not taken off the way we'd hoped it to. So anyway, how do you handle that? Well, let's do what we do normally. Let's ask our clients. Because it's our clients that are looking for the property. We need to know where they're going to look to find this lease option property. So, client, where are you going to look? Well, some of our clients say they talk to realtors. They've met with realtors, and they say, hey, I'm interested in the lease option or something like that. I can't buy a house, but I'd love to buy one eventually. So if a realtor is going to help them, they have to be able to do a search on MLS to find the terminology. Now, whether you call it lease option or lease to own as we do, you want to make sure all of those variations are included prominently in your ads. Lease option, rent to own, lease purchase, lease to own, on and on and on. You want to make sure that when a realtor searches, they can find that your property fits that criterion. Now, should you advertise it as a rental or for sale? The answer is clearly yes. Yes to both. In the rental section, you'll state the monthly lease price and prominently mention that this is a lease option with the key terms of your program. In the sales section, in that ad, you'll mention the price at which they could buy the property today. Don't scare them away with the future price that they'll be buying it for 2 to 3 years from now. Now, in our experience, the majority of these clients, again, we're getting a little bit of something in the chat here. I just want to check what it would be. Ah, yes. Good point. No, thank you, Cindy. And that, let me bring this up. We have not done this yet, but one of the things we're going to do is without all the description, we'll have these key points. So, for example, we're talking about number 11, advertising and marketing, a lease option property. That will be listed in a document that we're going to put a link onto the website in the next few weeks. So under each of these shows, you'll be able to pull up at least the reminder of the topics, and that way follow along better. We won't put the entire text of what we've covered, because then you wouldn't listen to our shows. You'd just read our documents. We want you to do both. Anyway, so in our experience, clients are searching other internet sites. They're searching Craigslist, eProperty, a number of other sites that seem to crop up every 6 months or so. The more sites you use, the better ads you have, and the more complete your keyword lists, the faster the right client finds the property and signs a contract. Alternatively, you can take our approach. Find a client first, and then buy a property that fits their needs. We've talked about this before. Clearly, advertising and marketing can be expensive and time-consuming, but there's nothing like a vacant, leased-owned property to make you realize how important it is to do, and to do it well. Okay, skill number 12, check your applicants. When we discussed this about rentals, I highlighted it's a very important factor that determines your ultimate profitability of the investment. The criteria you use for these tenant buyer clients will be similar to a rental. But I'll add in one absolute must. You need to get a copy of their credit report to fully understand their ability to get a traditional mortgage in the future. The two key questions I try to answer with when we check our applicants. Number one, does this person really want to own a home? Or are they really long-term renters? And second, will they qualify to buy the property in 2 to 4 years? Now, I don't have a silver bullet to share with you on how to assess these. But what I find is if I don't share what my criterion are, and I ask them to explain why they're interested in our program, not just this property, but our program, then they share, and I can assess, are they really interested in buying, or they just like the price, the property, and a long-term lease. Now, the rest of the advice I shared in the rental program on screening your applicants still applies. I won't repeat them here. I do recommend you re-listen to this section in the rental properties. Okay, number 13, sign a contract with your tenant buyers. Now, what contract do you sign? Well, here's my reminder. That's the contract you designed that outlines the terms of your program and provides them the option to acquire the property. Okay, it's not a standard MLS agreement. Now, when we talked about rentals, I mentioned that there is a legal limit in every state or jurisdiction as to how much your security deposit can be. In Arizona, it happens to be a month and a half. And there are some limits to how much can be non-refundable. You can't make 100% of it non-refundable for cleaning costs. There are no such limits on what you can charge for the option fee, nor are there any guidelines in the laws. So, how much of the lease can you apply to the contract, to their purchase? Again, no guidance. You decide. Now, how do you decide? Common sense. Remember, the higher the amount that you get as security, whether by having it come from monthly payments or in your option fee, the longer time the property will be vacant. But you'll have more security. And as I have often said, common sense is not as common as it used to be. Number 14, file your rental sales tax returns. In Arizona, we call them TPT, Transaction Privilege Tax. For those of you following your notes from our show on rentals, you'll notice I didn't bring up two of the skills, dealing with the four T's, nor using property managers. I'm not saying you can't use a property manager on a lease option property, but you usually don't need one. And they definitely should charge less than on a rental. Even though your client will ultimately buy the property, during the contract they are leasing it, and those sales tax still apply as they do on a rental. So anyway, skill number 15, evicting a tenant buyer who defaults. The chances of needing to evict a tenant buyer are far less than with a rental property. Generally, providing them notice of an eviction, because they are behind on their payments, will make them work a lot higher to pay the lease payment. They don't want to lose the house they're planning to buy. I shared some tips when we talked about rentals. It may be worth reviewing those again. And for those listeners that just tuned in, you're listening to the Wealth DNA Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki. You can listen to the archive to pick up the beginning part of the show. That's on wealthdna.us. We're talking about investing in lease option properties. We're addressing the 40 key topics. We've covered most of them, so we're in the home stretch. Number 16, the walkthrough inspection. When a tenant buyer leaves, similar to when a tenant signs a contract or leaves, you'll want to meet them at the property, make a list of things that were damaged or need repair, and reminder, the Landlord-Tenant Act dictates what is and isn't allowed. Number 17, again, this is in the case of a default, because we're talking about these last three, we're all talking about if the client did default. 17 is refer fund their security deposit. Now, it's going to be very rare to have a tenant buyer default, first of all. And secondly, if they do default, for you to be legally liable to refund their security deposit. In our case, we have a 3-year lease, which I think I mentioned. And they'd be entitled to that refund if they walked, if they waited to the end of the 3-year term, decided not to buy the property. They're going to walk away from it, not exercise their option to acquire it. Okay, so at that point, they're entitled since their lease is over. They don't have to buy it. But if they default during the lease, they're not entitled to get the security deposit since they signed a 3-year contract and have defaulted on it. In these cases, I'm not obligated, as I told you, I've chosen to let the tenant buyer know that I will refund their deposit minus any damages. Now, why would I do that? It's going to lower my return. You see, it's more important to me that they leave the property in good condition and that we leave on good terms than the $1,000 or $2,000 security deposit. Besides, they may come back into our program a few years later or send us 5 or 10 more referrals. However, when they default on the lease portion of their agreement, they automatically default on the option agreement. I have absolutely no legal obligation, nor do I return their option fee or any of the money they accumulated toward the purchase. That money, recall, was being saved up for them to buy the property. If they're not buying the property, they're not entitled to it. Number 18, and here again, I'm going to refer you back to the rentals. These are skills 28 through 33. They include topics like collecting on a court judgment, cost segregation, the IRS informational returns, the 1099s, 1096s, filing your income taxes and protecting your assets from lawsuits. And again, if you don't have your notes from the rentals, I highly suggest you listen to that show again. Number 19, dealing with appraisers. Now, when we talked about investing in fix and flips on our last show, I shared the current dilemma with appraisals and some important tips on how to deal with appraisers. Since your buyer is already living in the property, you have a slight advantage in trying to schedule the appraiser to come and see it. You work with your tenant buyer for them to schedule a time that works for them and for you to be there and come prepared with the information to help the appraiser properly appraise. Number 20, contingency plans. I'm going to cover some stuff we did talk about earlier, but this is so important. I don't want you to forget about it. You have contingency plans if the appraisal does not work out. These were considerations in designing your lease option program. If you decided to determine the sale price at the time of contract signing, as we do, then you might run into a dilemma where the appraised value is below the purchase price. Or this could even happen if you have your purchase price, or your sale price from your perspective, dependent on the appraisal. The appraisal could come back much lower than you expected you would sell the house for. So if that appraisal comes back very low, then the first step is it logical? Is it in line with comparable normal properties as opposed to distressed properties, lender-owned and pre-foreclosures? If the appraisal is unreasonably low, you can request having a second appraisal, and paying for that appraisal might be well worth it. The other consideration is maybe the bank will provide them the financing anyway. If they're applying for an FHA loan, which requires less than 5% down, and they have 5 or 20% down since the loan amount will then be within the bank's guidelines, so the purchase price is less important than what the loan amount is versus the purchase price. And remember, if you're rebating part of their lease payments, you're going to have a lot more down payment. They're going to have a lot more down payment because of the money you accumulated on their behalf. That's what we do. Now, you have a number of contingency plans. In addition, they include owner or seller financing, lowering the price to match the appraisal, negotiating return of part of their option fee, and putting the property back up for a new lease option client. And as I said, there are enough different ways to do things that each of us can have our own. We're almost there, folks. 21, preparing for closing. Closing the sale of a lease option property is probably a lot less stressful than any other kind of sale. Neither the buyer nor you, the seller, have a firm deadline to get it done. buyer's already living there in the property. And whether they pay you an extra month's worth of rent or they buy a little earlier won't change much for you or for them. When a fix and flip investor has a high interest rate loan on their property, they're in much more of a hurry to sell and to stop paying those high interest rates. Okay, and then the final skill, knowing the advantages of having a real estate investment fund like BI Solutions Corp manage the lease option investment property for you. I realize there's a lot to know, a lot to handle, and it just may make sense to partner with somebody who, unlike a property manager, takes a percentage of profits, not of the rent, and therefore has the incentive to earn more for you so that they can earn more. I'd love to talk to you about this opportunity. If nothing else, you can get a free education on the entire process on the first deal we do together, and then you can decide whether you want to do it yourself or continue partnering. One last topic. How's the demand for leased option properties? We are going to run over a little bit today, as I forewarned Pete. On one hand, there are a lot fewer clients looking for lease option properties than there are renters. Sounds like bad news, right? Well, on the other hand, there are far fewer lease option properties available than there are rental properties. I guess normal supply and demand and market prices keep things somewhat in balance. Now, let's take another look at who that typical tenant buyer is. They're a person with bad credit, had a foreclosure, had a short sale, got divorced, filed for bankruptcy, or they usually don't have any, and I would say not or, they usually have a long history of not working for the same company, maybe due to layoffs, maybe due to job changes, and they don't have a lot of cash to put down for the down payment. Now, if you compare that to profile, to what's happened during the Great Recession, did a few people lose jobs? Did a few people lose homes? Did they have foreclosures and bankruptcies, etc.? Well, you'll notice that there are hundreds or thousands or even millions of people that fit that profile, many of whom used to own their own home and would love to have their own home again. Frankly, today is probably the ideal period for investing in lease option period in properties. Demand extremely high, but very few investors have switched to this strategy. I feel like a lone wolf. Okay, let's say you decide to invest in some lease option properties, or we call them lease-to-own properties. What's likely to happen over the next 3 years, but that's important for your profitability? I'll share my view. But remember, the very first skill for lease option investing is understanding where we are in the economic cycle. I believe housing prices, as well as inflation, will increase dramatically. I also think that banks will either decide to start lending again, maybe because interest rates will be higher and therefore more attractive to lend, or there will be some regulatory or legislative changes to force banks to start lending again. With that backdrop, your lease option property investments will do extremely well. After you sell those properties, how will the prospects look to buy more? Now, my crystal ball gets a little bit foggier as we get out 3 to 5 years. Maybe it's my eyesight. Maybe it's just because we're trying to predict the future. That's hard. So let's see how things evolve in the next few years, and then 3 years out, you can decide whether to continue investing in lease option properties or in other investment opportunities. Now, how will you know? By listening to the Wealth DNA radio show, of course. Let's try to wrap up, summarize some of the key points. Now, first of all, you may be wondering why I covered lease option as the third in our series versus maybe first or second. Is it because I left my favorite two strategies to cover last? No. The reason is simple. I'm covering them in the sequence of familiarity and number of transactions. I had an opportunity to do a brief survey of a group of about 50 or 60 real estate investors about a month ago, and they confirmed there were far more landlords in the room than there were fix and flip investors. Now, that survey wasn't intended to be statistically accurate, but did confirm what I thought was the case. The most common strategy for direct real estate investment is, number one, rental properties. The second most common is fix and flip. The third is lease option, a much smaller niche. And very few investors specialize in this, at least for now. Maybe this show will change that. Incidentally, there were only two private mortgage lenders in that room. And when we asked the investors what key things they were looking for, more than 30% were looking for private mortgage financing. That's our topic in July. Now, I suspect there are a few listeners who may be wondering if selling their own home using a lease option contract might be a good way to sell. Others in the listener base may be thinking they haven't got enough information today to make a decision whether to invest in a rental or lease option property. If you're in either of these categories, then you'll clearly want to do two things. Give me a call or send me an email asking what we might be able to do together. Or two, listen to the second part of our series in July, and then you'll have the fourth strategy. That, of course, is a good way to increase your return and lower your risk. To tune into the show every 2 weeks. We'll challenge you, share the investment fundamentals. We'll share some good ideas and inspire you to be as wealthy as you want to be. The next Wealth DNA radio show is the second Monday of July. That's Monday, July 9th, 8 a.m. Arizona time. Same place, same time. Actually, I'll be traveling, so I'll be calling in rather than broadcasting from our studio. Wow. The next show is in July? That means the year will be half over, and each of us needs to review our New Year's resolutions to see if we're past the halfway point toward achieving our goals. We're also in the process of scheduling some really great guests for 2012. I'll keep you posted. And as usual, your suggestions are welcome. The archives of past shows and, of course, this one are available on wealthdna.us. The questions, suggestions, whether about real estate investments, other types of investments. If you haven't received emails reminding you about this show, just send an email to ron@wealthdna.us. We'll keep you posted about future shows and events. And if you're already not doing it, consider a direct investment in real estate, and maybe lease option properties are perfect for you. Happy investing.
You've been listening to Wealth DNA with the Ronald, Ron Naraki. Wealth DNA is a Boomer and the Babe Enterprises radio production. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.